ETL Echo presents Quarter Life Crisis, an art and fic collaboration. Faint of Heart by E. Evans, with artwork by Abrilas. Draco has been teaching at Hogwarts for 6 days when he realizes someone invisible is sitting in the back row of his classroom. Of course, it's Potter. Draco looks down at his roster, where H. Potter is scrawled in glaring gold script next to a seat in the empty back row. Only Potter would forget about the charmed parchment he himself taught Draco how to use a week ago. They've just started on the first recorded sightings of modern werewolf packs in Great Britain, which puts them at around 1595. It's a bit of a stretch to jump all the way to the late days of Voldemort's doomed regime, but Draco doesn't think his class will mind. It's already very apparent that his students have an absolute thirst for information about the war, or Potter. "In the Battle of Hogwarts," Draco redirects, "several lycanthropes fought on behalf of the Dark Army." Draco's heart beats a little faster as he waits for one of them to point out that he himself had, in fact, fought for the losing side. But the first-year students only sit up a bit straighter, eyes wide. So far, he's gotten whispers and side-eyed glances in the halls, but no one's dared to say anything to his face. McGonagall's not-so-subtle speech at the welcome feast about the importance of thinking for oneself and respecting those who've earned respect seems to have mostly worked, though it embarrassed the hell out of Draco. None of that, however, has left him as off-balance as Potter's veering from terrified to sullen to overly friendly every time they've encountered each other. "Unfortunately, the anti-creature prejudice that pervaded Wixen society at the time, and still exists today in many spheres, allowed Voldemort to persuade many beings with ministry-classified status that their lives would be better under his rule." As usual, however, Draco narrows his eyes at the shimmer of magic in the vacant seat next to Cecil Cattermole. "That's not the entire story. One of the most prominent members of the Order of the Phoenix, Remus Lupin, was bitten as a child and faced frequent discrimination throughout his life. Nonetheless, he was instrumental in bringing about the end of the Second Wizarding War. Deputy Minister Granger has dedicated several pieces of legislation in his honor, expanding the rights of non-human magical beings." As an interesting aside, Draco has no desire to be the kind of professor that includes fun facts in lessons, but needs must. Lupin was the one who taught Professor Potter how to cast a Patronus at only 13.
"Professor?"
A blonde, curly-haired girl raises her hand, face shining with eagerness. Her name escapes Draco until he steals a glance at his trusty parchment.
"Is it true that Professor Potter fought off 100 Dementors in the Ministry by himself so Muggleborns could escape?"
Draco resists the urge to shout in victory. He hums thoughtfully instead.
"It may have been around that many. I'm sure Professor Potter would love to tell you all about his heroics in the war during your next defense class."
There's a quiet noise of outrage somewhere in the back row.
"I know you're there, Potter."
Draco shuffles the stack of essays left behind by his first years.
"Did you really think I wouldn't be able to tell when you're skulking about after all this time?"
For a moment, Draco thinks Potter's going to be stubborn. Draco's fully prepared to wait him out. After all, it's his classroom, and he already has plenty of marking. But there's a resigned sigh, and a head of unruly curls appears.
"How'd you know I was here?"
Potter huffs, struggling to untangle himself from the cloak. His limbs appear and disappear in an unsettling fashion.
"The roster, Potter."
Draco waves the parchment in Potter's direction.
"The same one every professor is required to use in their classrooms?"
"Oh, right." Rather than look appropriately chastened, he pins Draco with a glare. "That was low, Malfoy. It takes me weeks each year to get them to stop asking me stuff like that. And how do you even know about Remus teaching me that, anyway?" Draco rolls his eyes.
Everyone who's read Skeeta's insipid biography of you knows that.
The rest of Potter's body is finally visible, and stays that way. Draco is distressed to realize Potter's wearing only a tight vest and faded denims under the cloak. The muggle clothing makes him look unfairly fit.
"So, you've read my biography, have you?" Potter says. How has this turned on Draco, when Potter's the one he's caught lurking in his classroom?
Draco splutters. Absolutely have not.
Potter's grinning. Draco would really prefer he was invisible again.
It's not my fault the bloody prophet reported snippets of it on the front page for months.
Sure,
Potter says in an irritating sing-song.
Whatever you say, Malfoy.
It is whatever I say.
Draco straightens.
As this is my classroom, and you're the only one who's been spying on me like a lunatic. What is it, Potter?
His ire rises, surprisingly rapidly, considering that he and Potter are generally on good terms these days. But the memory of his horrible sixth year feels too close to the surface when Potter's standing there clutching that stupid cloak.
Wondering if I'm poisoning the youth with my sermons about pureblood supremacy? Going to report to Minerva I almost accidentally let a Dark Lord slip?
What?
Potter finally has the decency to look abashed.
No, nothing like that.
We're too old for this.
It's been less than a week since he arrived, and Draco already feels tired and stupid.
Is it really going to be a problem to both exist in this enormous castle? Get on with it, then. I'd rather deal with your outburst now than after I've fully unpacked.
I'm not going to have an outburst, Potter protests, flushing. I don't know. I'm sorry.
He grimaces.
Curious, all right?
Curious? Draco narrows his eyes. About me?
I don't know, okay? I mean, yeah. Old habits die hard and all that, I guess.
Harry shrugs, scuffing the floor with the toe of his trainer.
Old habits? Draco prods. And which habits were those?
Come on, Malfoy, Potter sighs. Don't make me say it.
The flip in his stomach at the confirmation of Harry Potter's attention transports him back to his school days. Draco reminds himself that he's nearing 30, and Potter is his colleague, and spying on one's colleague in an invisibility cloak should in no way be taken as flattering, but rather a sign of potential madness.
Well, I never had a habit of stalking you,
Draco says loftily. A bald-faced lie he hopes Potter won't dispute while stewing in his own embarrassment.
So I can't relate. But I have matured, even if you clearly haven't, and I accept your apology. Now, do you mind if we go have dinner, or would you like me to come up with other ways to prove I'm not here to brainwash children into joining my evil cult?
Sheepish, Potter trails after Draco to the classroom door.
I didn't really think you were going to spew any pure-blood bullshit, he insists as they make their way down the corridor.
Draco side-eyes him.
I didn't.
Sure, Potter.
Now can I expect you in the afternoon, or have you scheduled time to rummage through my rooms in search of cursed objects?
It's petty, but Draco finds great satisfaction in how Potter sulks the rest of the way to the Great Hall. Harry waits 2 days to sneak back into Malfoy's classroom. It's not that he thinks Malfoy is up to something. It's not. It's just that he's found himself going a bit spare ever since he walked into Minerva's office a week ago and saw, of all people, Draco Malfoy in her guest chair. He hasn't seen him in weeks and, well, this is the only thing he can imagine that might help him stop obsessing, stop wondering about what Malfoy might be like as a teacher, whether he'd be taken seriously by the students, whether he'd be intimidating like Snape, or severe like Minerva. Harry was fascinated to discover that he's neither, more like a prickly version of Remus than anything, over-enthused about his subject matter, and clearly brilliant, yet still defensive at the suggestion he might actually like his Gryffindor students. Harry can't resist teasing him about the latter at lunch after one of his third-year students chatters away excitedly about Malfoy during defense. Harry's hopelessly charmed that Malfoy's students seemed to immediately like him, though he supposes a former Death Eater whose wand had helped Harry Potter defeat Voldemort is inherently more interesting than a ghost who'd forgotten he was dead. That afternoon, Malfoy's lecture about the Muggle Cold War is so engaging, Harry nearly forgets he's wearing the cloak, and that he's definitely not supposed to be there at all, and has to stop himself raising his hand to ask a question. Harry is just thankful he's figured out how to get around the bloody charmed roster. If he doesn't sit down, his presence goes undetected. As he slips out, Harry resolves not to use the cloak again. Curiosity sated. He breaks 7 hours later. Malfoy ducks out early from dinner, and Harry can't resist following. He's merely going to the library, and Harry has to crouch by Pince's desk, feeling like an idiot, until she's finally distracted and he can slip out the door. He doesn't feel quite foolish enough, however, to not follow Malfoy out of the castle and onto the grounds the next night. Malfoy takes a meandering walk towards the Quidditch pitch, lays on the grass for a while reading, and then almost gives Harry a heart attack, shedding his trousers and revealing a pair of very tight-fitting green swim trunks. Harry scrambles back to the castle from the lakeshore and absolutely does not think about what's under Malfoy's swim trunks as he falls asleep. On the 17th day Malfoy's at Hogwarts, Harry wonders seriously if he has lost the plot. Observing Malfoy has only made him think about Malfoy more, not less. He teaches history of magic with adorable enthusiasm, gesturing manically as he lectures. He gossips with Luna over breakfast and listens attentively to Neville's soliloquies about dragon dung fertilizer at dinner. He sits in the staff room late at night marking papers, with a cup of cold tea forgotten at his elbow. And, while Malfoy's doing all of that, he wears the softest-looking sweaters over perfectly fitted button-downs, which he sometimes rolls up to his elbows, revealing slender wrists and a golden dusting of hair on muscled forearms, and stylish leather brogues and reading glasses that he sometimes pushes up off his nose to rest in his impossibly blonde and touchable hair. And Harry hates all of it. "He's everywhere," Harry moans into his pumpkin juice that afternoon. "I can't escape him." Alas, he doesn't mention it's partly because of his renewed habit of following Malfoy around in his cloak in the evenings. "Who?" asks Neville across the table, Luna on his left. He's patiently waiting for Harry's response, a spoonful of soup poised near his mouth. "Malfoy!" Luna and Neville exchange a significant look.
"Harry," Luna says gently, reaching for his hand. "Is this about what happened in my summer solstice party?"
Harry snatches his hand back in horror.
"What? No!"
"It's nothing to be embarrassed about," Luna continues blithely. "You were probably just overly excited. You should have just talked to Draco. I'm sure he would give you another..."
Neville snickers into his French onion soup, only laughing harder when Harry chucks a bread roll at him.
"I knew you wouldn't be able to let that go, mate."
"I have not. I have let it go," Harry says quickly, casting a wild look around them to see if Malfoy is in earshot. "That's not what this is about." Luna tilts her head curiously.
"Then what is it about?"
I never expected to have to see Malfoy again every day. Everywhere I go, it feels like I'm bloody 15 again," he grumbled. "I'm just saying, Minerva could have given the rest of us a little more notice or something."
15? Neville asks with a shit-eating grin. "Really, Harry? At 15?
That's not what I meant," Harry hisses.
"It's perfectly natural to have sexual urges during puberty, Harry."
Luna takes a bite of the discarded roll, which she's retrieved from the floor.
"I know I had several vivid dreams about Draco when we were younger. They were rather enjoyable."
Neville opens his mouth, far too interested. Harry jumps to his feet.
"I have to go, now."
"Oh, are you sure?"
Luna waves merrily to someone behind him with her half-eaten chunk of bread.
"Draco's just arrived. Shall we ask him about his erotic dreams?"
It had been much too humid that night. Everyone had been a little weirder than normal. The combination of the abundant quality of alcohol and the sticky summer air, with Luna's usual infusion of mysticism into any event, leaving them all irreverent and giddy. The party was crowded, dozens of them packed into Luna and Neville's tiny but overflowing garden in Hogsmeade. Harry had arrived with Ron and Hermione, but lost them between rounds of butterbeer pong and too many fire whiskey shots. He'd wandered around for a while after that, feeling out of sorts. The collision of his life at Hogwarts with all of his friends from London was a bit overwhelming. Too many people who wanted to share a drink and hear about his second year of teaching, and ask whether he'd be able to make it to the pub crawl Seamus was planning for Dean's birthday. He loved them all, but he was exhausted. And drunk. He was trying, ineffectually, to get out of a conversation with Zacharias Smith when Malfoy appeared. He felt long fingers wrapped proprietarily around his wrist, startling him. Malfoy tugged him away, apologizing smoothly about needing Harry's help with the cake.
"You're welcome," Malfoy said, dryly, releasing Harry's wrist once they were a safe distance.
Seeing him made his stomach flutter, not unpleasantly, which he'd analyzed later at length. They'd spoken only once that night, a mumbled hello from Harry, as he sipped a drink silently at Luna's side. Harry swayed closer, the outline of Malfoy's hand still warm on his skin. He wondered why he had let go.
Thanks. Potter?
Malfoy asked, amused. His hair was mussed, a little fluffier than usual from the heat. Harry liked it. He wondered if it was as soft as it looked.
"Your hair's very shiny," he blurted.
"Shiny?" Malfoy sounded incredulous.
"No," Harry said hurriedly. "It's a compliment. Shiny like gold. Or, wait, that doesn't sound nice. I meant it to be nice."
There was a distant voice shouting something in the back of his head. It sounded suspiciously like Hermione. He ignored it. Malfoy sucked in a breath. Harry's eyes dropped to his mouth.
"I wasn't aware you were interested in being nice to me."
"I am," Harry licked his lips. "Interested."
He was just sober enough to realize Malfoy had gone strangely stiff. Before he could open his mouth again and take it back, clarify that what he actually meant was he was interested in being polite, obviously, because Harry was a nice person and that sort of thing was important. Malfoy surged forward, pressing his lips to Harry's. They tasted like cinnamon. Harry's hands flew up to clutch at Malfoy's vest, and even through his drunk, hormone-muddled brain, he remembers thinking, "Cooling charm, oh," because Malfoy was dry and clean and smelled like smoke and lemon and the rain after a thunderstorm. Whereas Harry was sweaty and drunk and probably smelled like knobweed sap, because earlier, Neville had told him to take a closer look at his new seedlings, and he'd been sprayed in the face. But Malfoy was kissing him anyway, so enthusiastically that Harry forgot to kiss him back for a minute, because it was just so lovely just to be kissed.
"Potter," Malfoy sighed into his mouth, and he was done for. Insides liquid with arousal, Malfoy's lips nipping urgently at Harry's bottom one. Harry's pleased noise when Harry opened his mouth wider, leaving him delirious. A bead of sweat dripped down the small of Harry's back, making him shiver.
"It's really warm," Harry babbled as Malfoy moved to his neck. He did feel lightheaded, like Malfoy physically sucked all the oxygen from his lungs when he was sucking on his tongue.
"Why is it so warm in Scotland?"
Malfoy's eyes were bright, a little wild. His hands still framed Harry's sweaty face.
"Heatwave," he said distractedly. His voice was rough and breathless and entirely too much. To hear Malfoy sound like that? Just because he had kissed Harry? Because he had kissed Harry.
"Right," Harry closed his eyes, heart pounding erratically. Then he fainted.
"Potter,"
Harry freezes. His wand slips suddenly through his sweaty palm and clatters to the ground. His recent theory that Malfoy has become a Legilimens seems increasingly plausible. Harry has no other idea how Malfoy could have known he was there, unless he's caught the volume and tenor of Harry's thoughts.
I know it's you, Potter.
It's debatable whether pulling off the cloak and facing Malfoy will be less mortifying than grabbing his wand and making a run for it. He's halfway decided on the latter course of action when Malfoy darts out a hand and snatches the silvery fabric.
Seriously? Malfoy says incredulously. What on earth are you doing in my classroom under that thing again?
Harry grimaces, face flushing.
I'm starting to get concerned, Potter. Shall we go up to Madame Pomfrey together and have your thick skull checked out? I've always suspected you'd go round the bend entirely one day. Granted, I never thought you were particularly sane in the first place. At least in sixth year you were technically right that I was up to something, even if your evidence at the time was extremely flimsy.
I was right, he mutters.
Right, well.
Draco takes a deep breath, frowning.
So you are concerned about my teaching?
No, of course not.
Then what?
Harry doesn't have a good answer. Malfoy's eyes narrow, gaze calculating as he examines Harry's flushed face and guilty shifting.
Oh, Malfoy says, eyebrows flying up. I see.
What? Harry says, defensive. He has the absurd impulse to break eye contact in case Malfoy can see the very uncolleague-like thoughts flitting across Harry's brain. Malfoy's lip curls, a slow, predatory smile that makes Harry's throat dry.
You were just watching me.
That's not... No, actually, you're right. It was the blood purity thing.
Right, Malfoy says, gleefully. We'll go with that for now.
Good. Harry takes a quick step backward. Right. Glad I didn't hear any, pure blood crap. Not that I think you're... He stops, shakes his head as if he can erase the last few minutes of this interaction. Anyway. Malfoy smirks harder.
I'm glad, too.
Well, I'd better... Harry jerks a thumb over his shoulder and backpedals out of the room, tripping over the hem of the invisibility cloak in his haste.
Yes, Malfoy says. See you at dinner.
Malfoy. Draco. Hey. I'm sorry about last night. I'm pretty sure Luna slipped something into the punch. I swear I overheard Neville talking about how he's been growing Alohotzi over the summer for his fifth years. Anyway, sorry again. I'm not usually that much of a lightweight. If you want to ever get... I'm sure I'll see you. Harry. Later that evening, Harry visits Hagrid in an attempt to spend a few Malfoy-free hours to clear his head. He knows peace just for 5 minutes when Hagrid starts enthusing about the corral Malfoy's built for him at the edge of the forest for the baby Thestrals born a few weeks ago.
It's dead clever, Hagrid carries on, knitting needles clacking away in his broad lap and oblivious to Harry's chagrin. Never would have thought of it on me own. The charms let the older ones in and out as they please, but the little ones can't fly off too far and get lost.
That's great, Harry sighs, sipping his tea, and he wonders whether there's anyone in the castle left who Malfoy hasn't charmed. Maybe he should find the Bloody Baron for a nice chat.
What about you, Harry? Now I know you and Malfoy haven't always gotten along, but,
Hagrid gives an exaggerated wink,
Hermione says you've come round recently.
Tea dribbles out of Harry's mouth as he sputters. Really, he'd known nearly everyone at Luna's party had seen, to his continuing embarrassment, but Hagrid hadn't even been there. Hagrid roars with laughter as he tosses him his half-finished knit blanket.
Cheers, Harry!
When Harry trudges back up to the castle, he's even more restless. He tries not to think about the silvery fabric shoved in his jacket pocket. What did he used to do around here in the evenings before Malfoy showed up? He comes up blank,
besides an unhelpful memory of the several times he's walked in on Luna and Neville in the greenhouses.
"Oh," Harry says, stopping suddenly. Sorry.
Malfoy is lounging on the castle steps, hair glinting white in the moonlight, the loose dressing gown he's wrapped around himself flapping in the light breeze around his ankles.
"Potter," he says calmly, "I should have known you hadn't given up your habit of wandering the castle at odd hours."
Harry blushes, trying not to think about why he'd been wandering around the night before, and the night before that.
"Just visiting Hagrid," he mutters.
"Ah," Malfoy says. He stands, brushing invisible dirt off his pajamas. Harry follows the lines of his long fingers, skimming over what he has noted are very muscular thighs.
"Did he mention he's got me training hippogriffs with him on the weekend? I think he's enjoying watching how terrified I am, honestly."
Harry tears his eyes away from Malfoy's thighs.
"Well, you'd deserve that, a bit," he teases.
Then he swallows, Malfoy's rueful smile making his knees a little weak.
"I think Hagrid's becoming a fan, though."
Malfoy laughs.
"Yes, well, if I have to make up for my preteen self's misdeeds by spending time with Hagrid and some terrifyingly powerful magical creatures in the fresh air, instead of marking papers in my damp classroom, I suppose it could be worse."
"What were you doing out here, anyway?"
"Luna and I were stargazing. She's gone to join Neville in the greenhouse, though."
Harry snorts.
"Headed back now, then?"
Malfoy looks startled, but pleased.
"Lead the way."
Harry holds the door to the entrance hall open for Malfoy, then falls into place at his side. It's not that late, only 10:30 or so, but the castle is still, the closest portraits snoozing, and the cool night air a little thicker with magic. Harry loves this version of the castle when he wanders alone at night. But he's not alone now. Malfoy is there, strolling along beside him.
"Cecile is not in love with me," Harry protests.
Malfoy's nearly cackling at his own retelling of the way the second year had approached Harry at the staff table that morning, dithering behind him for several minutes before Malfoy got impatient and asked her to get on with it so he could eat his eggs in peace.
"She's just homesick."
"Potter," Malfoy snickers. "She asked you to escort her to Madame Puddyfoot's."
"She's 12, Harry winces, and confused.
"That's true. I should really be a little more sympathetic. I do remember what it's like."
"You mean you fancied a professor?
Who?" "Lupin, obviously."
"Remus?"
"He was all wounded, so sad and rugged-looking."
Malfoy shrugs.
"With all those scars. Trust me, I wasn't the only Hogwarts student who found that whole bit incredibly sexy."
"It wasn't a bit," Harry protests. "He was a werewolf. It was very sad. And, ugh, that's like saying my dad was hot. And, by the way, he's the father of your cousin."
"I'm sure he was."
Malfoy sweeps his eyes from Harry's head to feet.
"And as for any blood connection through Teddy, if you thought that loose of a familial tie would be a deterrent in the Black family, you should go and take another look at that tapestry of yours."
"Gross.
Oh, lighten up."
They amble down another corridor, Harry trying not to think about Malfoy fancying Remus.
"I'm surprised you weren't wearing your cloak tonight."
"Oh."
Harry nearly trips over his shoelace.
"No."
He rights himself, avoiding Draco's amused look, and shoves his hands in his pockets.
Listen. I am sorry about, you know, the other day."
"Which one?" Malfoy says, mildly.
One of the portraits on the wall has stirred and is watching them with interest, sleepy eyes blinking behind thick spectacles. Harry speeds up a little.
Both.
He conveniently doesn't mention the times Malfoy hadn't caught him.
"I was being a git. I should have just asked if I could hear you lecture, like a normal person. But you know I don't actually think you... I mean, I reckon you're a pretty good teacher. And I'm, glad you're here."
Malfoy is quiet. Harry chances a look at his profile. He doesn't look angry or annoyed, or even skeptical. He looks wistful.
I appreciate that, Potter.
Harry shrugs awkwardly. They're almost at the door to Malfoy's rooms, and Harry realizes with sudden embarrassment he's continued walking a good 5 minutes past his own rooms to prolong his time with Malfoy.
I wasn't sure,
Malfoy begins. Harry waits, then nudges him with an elbow. What?
I wasn't sure you'd be glad I was here.
Me neither, Harry almost says. But that's a lie. If he'd known Malfoy was coming to Hogwarts in advance, he would have spent the weeks leading up to term terrified and anxious and secretly thrilled, all of the feelings that have been spilling out of him since September 1st, just with longer to marinate.
After...
Malfoy clears his throat. They've reached his door, but Harry's lingering.
What happened last month?
It's right there, an opening for Harry to say something. Malfoy hesitates, one hand resting on the door handle. It's fine, Harry says instead. I mean, what happened? It was fine. Is fine.
Fine?
Malfoy says uncertainly, but with a hint of a smile.
You did pass out. You didn't seem fine.
It was really hot, Harry bursts out. He realizes what he said a second too late, and almost groans aloud.
Was it now?
Malfoy's lip twitches again. Yes, Harry stresses. The weather was hot. Too hot.
Funny.
Malfoy presses down, and the handle turns.
I thought it felt rather nice. Harry.
Potter, your apologies are unnecessary. I myself was not under the influence, a la Hotsey-laced drink or otherwise, and should have noticed your inebriation. I'm not surprised you're a lightweight. Perhaps next time Luna has a party, I'll make sure you're more comfortable. Best, DM.
A few days later, Harry knows, without a doubt, he's lost the plot. At breakfast, Malfoy brushes his hand for a moment too long as he passes the sugar, a smirk on his lips. During the staff meeting that afternoon, he sits so close to Harry on Minerva's settee that the entire length of his thigh presses against Harry's, burning through Harry's scratchy teaching robes. At dinner, Luna asks Harry with concern why he's not eating much. Malfoy asks, with a straight face, whether Harry's been under the weather. Harry does not feel fine. He's struggling to eat because he's too busy watching Malfoy lick juice off his dripping fingers after a sensuous performance of eating a peach. Minerva shoots him a suspicious look when he bolts from the table, but Neville just laughs and laughs. Harry finds time to call Ron and Hermione the third week of classes, when the shiny newness of Malfoy's presence at the castle has lost interest for everyone except Harry, and he's desperate for a fresh audience. He's been trying not to talk about Malfoy, he really has, but it's proving difficult. Neville asked Harry at dinner to pass the sprouts, and Harry launched into a 5-minute monologue about how Malfoy had skipped breakfast because he'd been up late last night helping Harry plan dueling lessons for his 5th years. Luna had suggested Harry bring Malfoy breakfast in bed if he was concerned with his diet. That shut Harry up quickly. The look Hermione gives him is far too knowing, even conveyed over the staticky international flu connection. So is the last time you saw him... Yes, Harry interrupts, much too heatedly. He clears his throat and cringes at the memory. Yeah, I guess. I'd heard he was up for the position. Have you read his most recent article in 20th Century Magical History? He made some excellent points about the connection between the 1945 Wizengamot reforms and the Death Eater's ability to consolidate power so quickly in the late 90s.
What? No, of course not. And you knew?
Hermione tisks. Harry, you're an academic now.
You could at least pretend to show some interest in your colleague's scholarly pursuits.
I read the defense journals. He did. Sometimes. When they had pictures.
And don't change the subject. I only heard rumors.
Hermione raises an eyebrow.
Shall I owl you every time I hear a rumor about Draco Malfoy, then?
Yes, obviously. No, Harry says aloud. But maybe when it has to do with my place of work, yeah, a bit of a heads up would be nice.
Well,
Hermione's lips press together, her shoulders shaking slightly.
I imagine you'll have, loads to catch up on.
Hermione, Ron cries, looking vaguely nauseous.
What?
She protests, a giggle escaping.
I just meant Harry's always been quite curious about what Malfoy gets up to.
Ron groans, a large hand covering his contorted face.
Please, woman,
he pleads, muffled.
Can we talk about something else? I'm picturing it again.
I second that, Harry says, nodding vigorously.
He is actually picturing it again, and it's definitely not helping.
Oh, fine,
Hermione tugs Ron's hand down, still grinning too widely for Harry's taste.
Tell us about Luna's new astronomy curriculum, then. Do you think she'll ever get permission to take her NEWT students on a Muggle spaceship again?
A long soak later that night, in the luxurious tub in the staff bath, helps Harry forget, at least for a few minutes, that he's basically turned into a stalker. It's almost worse than if Malfoy had still been attempting evil. Harry's followed Malfoy in the cloak nearly every night for a week, and he desperately needs to kick the habit. Not only is he becoming a full-fledged creep, what he's witnessed is driving him crazy. Malfoy, waxing philosophical about the Cornish pixie uprisings of 1986 in the staff room to Binns, who'd retired merely to his favorite armchair. Malfoy, comforting a crying second-year Slytherin with a large hunk of chocolate and talking to the Thestral foals in his posh accent, affectionate but completely serious, like he's not having a one-sided conversation. It's all very charming, and Harry's at wit's end by Friday evening. After he dresses, casting a quick drying charm at his frizzing curls, Harry throws the cloak on. He's determined not to spy on Malfoy, because he's being perfectly normal about the fact that they're going to share the castle for potentially the next 80 years. Truly. But he's not in the mood to encounter any students on his way back to his rooms. It's only 8, and not his night to patrol, so he's perfectly justified in hiding under the cloak. Minerva wouldn't approve, but the ability to traverse the castle without having to dole out detentions to any couples he sees snogging in the alcoves is too much to resist. Just as Harry's feet disappear, the door creaks open. Of course, it's Malfoy. He's in his dressing robe again, pajamas peeking out underneath, and when he starts to untie his robe, it sends a bolt of lust through Harry. There's no way Malfoy's going to believe this is an accident, Harry realizes with increasing dread. Even though Malfoy hasn't seen him yet, he's not going to be able to get out of the bathroom without Malfoy hearing. Heart pounding, Harry tiptoes toward the door anyway, wondering if he can summon Peeves quickly enough to throw Malfoy off. Then Malfoy steps out of his trousers. Harry stills. As he watches, Malfoy throws a casual hand behind him, locking the door. Fuck. Malfoy putters around, shedding more of his clothes and fussing with the taps on the huge marble bath. He crouches down to test the temperature, and Harry nearly faints. The bulge at the front of his pants strains with the movement, leaving extremely little to Harry's imagination, which has already run wild. Harry closes his eyes, pressing further back into the tiled wall and reevaluating most of his life choices. Malfoy's planning on taking a bath, of all things. Harry tries not to audibly groan. Malfoy's fingers slip under the snug waistband of his pants, and Harry can't help letting out a whimper. Harry holds his breath as Malfoy pauses,
But a moment later, Draco is naked and slipping into the streamy water so fast Harry's barely had time to close his eyes in a last-ditch attempt not to be a total voyeur. Which he may be.
"You know," comes a muffled voice from the bath, "I always wondered whether you used that cloak for less than heroic purposes."
Harry's blood runs cold despite the perfumed heat that's spreading through the spacious room.
"It's all right," Malfoy sounds amused. "In fact, you can keep it on if you want."
There's a movement under the water.
"I would leave now, though, unless you've actually come for a show."
Harry's fairly sure he's been petrified. Malfoy's almost certainly touching himself now, though Harry's view is obscured by the citrus-scented bubbles forming under the tap. He's lounging, looking right where Harry is supposed to be hidden, a lazy smile on his lips.
"So, this is what you came for?"
"It's not. It's really not." But Harry cares less and less about arguing the point. His breathing is shallow, his own trousers tightening alarmingly quickly. Whatever Malfoy is doing should not be so hot. Harry's barely able to see, glasses fogging, but he can make out Malfoy's hand wrapped around what is clearly a very gorgeous, slender cock. Malfoy lets out a little grunt, tugging harder. The movement disturbs the water enough that he's suddenly visible. Harry forgets he's supposed to be still and grabs at his glasses so he can swipe the lenses with his vest.
"I can see your ratty trainers, Potter," Malfoy says.
There's a bar of soap on a little dish next to the tap. He plucks it up with his free hand and gestures toward Harry.
"If you admit you're under there, you could give me a hand."
He's torn between humiliation and arousal, but he reaches up with a shaking hand and pulls the cloak off, letting it slide to the floor. And then he's back by the edge of the bath, gazing down at the sight before him. Malfoy sprawled on the roomy bench furthest from him, still stroking himself lightly, hair curling a little at the edges in the humid air. Drops of water glisten on his muscled shoulders, face flushed and eyes dancing.
"Well, Potter," he says.
Harry strips off his own clothes with record speed. By the time he's wearing only his glasses, Malfoy's eyeing him hungrily.
"I changed my mind," he says,
and for a split second, Harry's panicked. This was all an elaborate joke.
"I think I deserve a chance to watch you for once."
"Oh?" Harry manages.
"Get in the water."
Harry obeys, wading into the roomy tub in what he's sure is a much more oafish manner than Malfoy managed. He hovers on the other side of the water, which is so deep his chest is mostly submerged, even standing.
Can I touch you?" he croaks.
"Not yet."
Malfoy tosses the soap lightly, and it lands beside Harry with a splash, bobbing on the surface.
"Here."
Harry blushes, but picks up the soap with shaking fingers.
What do you want me to do, then?"
"Start slow,"
Malfoy says, resting his arms on either side of the lip of the tub. Briefly, Harry mourns the switch in position, until he realizes he can see Malfoy's cock more clearly, rigid and straining up towards his pale stomach. There's a trail of dark blonde hair there, visible even under the rippling surface of the water, that makes Harry swallow hard.
"I want you slicked up for me."
Self-conscious, Harry moves the soap over his chest as slowly as he can stand it. He's been naked for about 30 seconds, and he's already craving friction, dying to know what it would feel like to rub up against all that pale skin on display before him. But apparently, he's supposed to be the one on display, he remembers, and he slides the soap lower. Malfoy's eyes follow the motion.
"That's good," Malfoy says. "You can use a finger, too. Only one."
Harry swallows, allowing his other hand to follow the first. Magical soap
is brilliant, he decides, and it's ridiculous he hadn't realized it before. There's enough slickness left on his skin to allow his finger to glide past his eager cock, skim across his perineum, and find the furled hole there. It's tight, and he's nervous, which doesn't help. But the feeling is electric, made more so as Malfoy sits up a little, clearly enjoying watching Harry squirm.
Just one, Malfoy reminds him.
Okay, Harry breathes, pushing past the ring of muscle and moaning a little.
Is this what you wanted? Malfoy asks. To watch me in here while you were touching yourself under your cloak?
No, he says hoarsely. I didn't. I was here already, and I didn't know you were in here.
I think you did,
Malfoy says. He pushes off the edge of the tub, swimming closer. Harry's head is fuzzy, the heat getting to him. He's reminded of Malfoy kissing him in the shadows of Luna and Neville's garden, sweat soaking into his back, and Malfoy's hips grinding against him.
I think you've been following me, hoping this would happen.
That's... no. Harry shudders as Malfoy comes to stand right before him, so close that if he moved even an inch, Harry thinks he could feel the length of Malfoy's cock brush against his own. I mean, I wanted this.
What if I had found you instead?
Malfoy asks. His hand moves slowly through the water, and Harry keens desperately, wanting it wrapped around his length more than anything. Malfoy just laughs, but his eyes are warm and gentle.
I wouldn't have been able to leave, either.
Oh, Harry breathes, finger stilling, where he's still rubbing it obediently on the inside of his tight hole. He's embarrassed, both at how needy he sounds and that he's found himself in this situation in the first place. But it's making him harder to imagine Malfoy under the cloak, watching Harry without him knowing. Should that be as hot as Harry's imagining? It's hard to care, when he's naked and wet in front of him, hopefully about to fuck him.
I think you can handle two.
Malfoy moves, and Harry's suddenly pressed against the bench behind him, the edge digging into his spine almost uncomfortably, Malfoy's arms caging him in on either side, and their cocks trapped between them beside Harry's hand.
Don't you?
Harry nods shakily and maneuvers another finger beside the first. It's a little awkward, but he's so thrilled that Malfoy's finally touching him that he barely notices. Can I? He gasps. Can I kiss you now?
Potter,
Malfoy says. Harry tries to focus, his vision blurring slightly at how near Malfoy's face is. He looks serious.
Why have you been following me?
I, Harry says. I mean, this, sort of. Not literally, I swear. I didn't know that you would be in here tonight. Malfoy chuckles, rolling his hips. His foreskin snags against Harry's, making him forget how to speak again.
I'll pretend I believe that.
It's true, Harry chokes. He's looser now, two fingers still working slowly. His other hand is still clutching the soap, though he's forgotten what he's supposed to be doing with it.
And why did you kiss me?
Malfoy asks sharply.
Before.
Harry blinks away the steam that's left moisture clinging to his lashes. Because I wanted to, he says, truthfully. I still want to. I thought you... Well, I thought it was pretty obvious, but then your reply seemed... I don't know. Polite.
You owe me an apology.
Malfoy frowns down at him.
What was I supposed to think?
It wasn't an apology, Harry stutters. I mean, it was, for the passing out part, and being drunk, but not for, you know, the kissing part. Malfoy sighs. Your penmanship didn't manage to convey those subtleties, Potter. Can you, Harry squirms again, debating whether he's allowed to wrap his leg around Malfoy's back, like he really, really wants to. Can you call me Harry? It's just when we're naked. Thanks.
Harry, comes the amused reply, but it's so fond that it makes Harry feel melty inside. I can do that, if you promise you're not going to faint again before we get to the good part.
Harry's pretty sure they're already at the good part, but he stays wisely silent.
It is warm in here, he says. And you're just really hot.
He closes his eyes, a little mortified. Malfoy's still not moving, just surrounding him with his long limbs and his heady, citrusy smell and warm, wet skin.
Shall I let you cool down, then?
No. Harry gives in and hooks his calf around Malfoy's back, the change in angle making him groan in satisfaction as his fingers slip further inside. No, please, anything but that.
Anything?
Malfoy leans in, his breath tickling Harry's damp cheek.
You might regret that.
He doesn't. Minutes later, when he's snogged Malfoy so thoroughly that his lips are swollen and his hand has started to cramp, Harry pulls back. Malfoy looks gloriously ruffled, his lips red, and both chest and pale neck flushed from the heat of the water and Harry's attention.
This is much better than just watching, Harry pants.
He finally strokes Malfoy, lightly, like he seems to like it. The soap is lost somewhere among the bubbles, and Harry wonders vaguely if they should find it.
I liked both, Malfoy says mildly.
With both hands gripping Harry's arse, he spins them around suddenly so he can settle on the bench.
I think I'd like to watch you get off on my cock now, though.
Harry braces himself on his pale shoulders, straddling his lap, bare knees on the tiles.
The soap! Oh!
Malfoy's found it already, his slender fingers parting Harry's arse cheeks and the bar sliding between them.
I wish I could watch a little more closely, Malfoy murmurs,
the soap disappearing. A finger replaces it, one hand still holding Harry open. Harry's sudden feeling of being exposed is only slightly lessened by the lapping water surrounding them both.
Will you let me, some other time?
Harry bites down on Malfoy's shoulder, embarrassed at how much he wants that. Malfoy seems to understand, chuckling softly as he dips his finger inside Harry's loosened hole. It's slick, slicker than it was with the soap, and he realizes Malfoy has cast something to ease the way. The gesture causes Harry's heart to give a funny squeeze.
I think you will, Malfoy decides for himself.
He strokes into Harry with purpose, searching until his finger skims across the spot that makes Harry's nerves spark with pleasure.
Yes, okay, Harry garbles into Malfoy's shoulder. Whatever you want.
Malfoy presses harder. Harry whimpers, and before he's recovered, Malfoy's finger is gone, and something blunt and larger is pressing against his rim.
Do you want this? Yes.
Harry tries to press down, but the head of Malfoy's cock keeps slipping against him, making him feel a little mad, until he growls with frustration and reaches down himself. He can't help but feel a little smug at Malfoy's sharp inhale, until Malfoy snaps his hips up and Harry nearly falls forward.
Ugh!
His fingers dig into Malfoy's biceps as he tries to regain control.
Fuck! You feel... Ugh!
I'll take that as a compliment, Malfoy says. He reaches down and grasps Harry's cock, straining between them.
You've been very good, Harry. Oh!
Harry manages to shift himself up and then slam back down again, finally finding a rhythm. Malfoy grips his cock with one hand and his hip with the other, his nose brushing Harry's.
Can you say that again?
What? Malfoy breathes against Harry's lips.
Harry? Or that you're good?
Harry's answering moan is enough.
I'll remember that.
Malfoy sounds far too delighted.
You are, you know. You're doing so well. You've been very patient.
Harry doesn't answer, just surges forward to capture Malfoy's mouth, the heat licking up his spine as Malfoy's cock hits just the right angle, again and again, is nearly too much. He wonders if he will pass out again, and prays he doesn't. He's not sure Malfoy would let him live that down again.
Harry, I'm close.
Malfoy bites hard at Harry's bottom lip, and he feels the jolt of pain-pleasure mirrored in his cock.
Harry!
3 more thrusts, and Malfoy's spilling inside of him. He can feel it, pulsing inside of him, the warmth detectable even submerged in the hot water. Harry whines a little as Malfoy slips out of him, sting barely registering when compared to the ache in his still hard cock.
Is this what you want?
Malfoy asks, grip tightening. His eyes are dark. Harry nods dumbly.
Say please.
Please, Draco, Harry blurts out. He's almost there, when Malfoy grabs his testicles and pulls gently, and then he's coming, the pearly liquid dispersing almost immediately in the water after it hits Malfoy's chest. Malfoy's fingers keep pulling softly around his softening cock and balls, draining him before he lets go. Harry regains awareness slowly. He registers the soreness in his arse he'll certainly feel tomorrow, the strength of Malfoy's thighs still supporting him where Harry nearly collapsed in his lap, the sting in his knees where he's been kneeling for a little too long on the stone bench. Malfoy's soft and slightly unsure expression.
That won't do.
Trying not to feel nervous himself, Harry leans forward and presses his lips briefly to Malfoy.
Thanks,
he whispers, then feels a little foolish.
You're welcome,
Malfoy says with a smirk.
You know, Draco,
Harry says softly.
Yes, Harry.
I have my cloak.
Yes, I recall.
It's not quite big enough for the two of us anymore, but...
Yes?
If I were to, say, follow you back to your rooms, no one would know.
Well, I certainly can't leave you alone,
Draco says.
It would be irresponsible. You might collapse from the power of my lovemaking on your way back to your rooms. Everyone saw what one kiss did to you last time.
Harry rolls his eyes, trying not to cringe at the memory of waking up to Hermione's concerned face, and Ron shaking with laughter, Draco wide-eyed behind them. If he does this, whatever this is, with Draco Malfoy, for real, he'll never hear the end of that. Draco squeezes Harry's hips, a question in his smile. Harry decides that it's fine. All was well. ETL Echo, echoing tales of enemies to lovers.